Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we talk about how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas. Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Kat Mendenhall, who's the creator of a line of Texas vegan cowboy boots. That's a little later on the show, but first some news.
The Center for Biological Diversity submitted a petition with more than 5,400 signatures asking Texas wildlife officials to ban the harmful practice of using gasoline and other toxic substances to hunt rattlesnakes. Commonly called gassing, this indiscriminate hunting method harms habitats and non-target wildlife, including federally endangered species that inhabit holes and crevices along with rattlesnakes. Texas is one of the last states where gassing is still legal. Colette Adkins, a scientist for the Center of Biological Diversity, states that it's indefensible that Texas still allows gassing to hunt wildlife. Using toxins to hunt rattlers risks contaminating groundwater and hurts hundreds of other animals, including 20 endangered species also living underground in the state. When snake hunters in Texas pour gasoline or other toxic substances into holes and crevices, the fumes and drowning effect of the gasoline force the dazed and poisoned snakes from their homes, where they can be captured by hunters. Gassing harms a wide variety of animals not intended to be hurt, including endangered cave invertebrates and charismatic burrowing owls, foxes, and toads. Along with risking contamination of groundwater, gassing may also ignite a fire or explosion. And snakes doused with gas cannot be safely eaten, posing a human health risk. Gassing is commonly used by Texas hunters targeting western diamondback rattlesnakes for rattlesnake roundup, such as the one being held later this month in Sweetwater, Texas. Because alternative hunting methods are available, a ban on gassing would not end rattlesnake roundups in Texas. In March of last year, the Center for Biological Diversity, the Texas Snake Initiative, and several Texas residents submitted a formal rulemaking petition to the State Parks and Wildlife Department to ban gassing. In response to that petition, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission in May directed the department to develop a proposed rule to prohibit gassing with a two-year delay on the effective date. But rather than finalize the proposed rule, officials with the politically appointed commission removed the issue from the November meeting agenda, and then the department informed the petitioners that Texas would not be moving forward with a rulemaking. Most states across the country, including all states bordering Texas, have banned wildlife gassing. If the outpouring of support prompts Texas Parks and Wildlife to amend the rules setting allowable methods for taking non-game animals in Texas, Texas would be the 30th state to ban gassing. It's a terrible practice. I hope everybody will write the Texas Wildlife Commission and urge them to consider this ban.
Several forward-looking individuals, including Bill Gates, have said that the future of food will be plant-based. Recently, we heard this from a surprising source. Tom Hayes, the CEO of Tyson Foods, one of the world's largest meat producers, sees plant-based protein as a big part of the food industry's future. Mr. Hayes told Fox Business News, "Plant-based protein is growing almost at this point a little faster than animal-based, so I think the migration may continue in that direction." Today, the U.S. food giant owns 5% stake in a plant-based protein company, Beyond Meat. The company also launched a venture capital fund worth $150 million to invest in startups that develop meat substitutes. Hayes, who was named Tyson Foods president last June, has already vowed to end the controversial use of antibiotics in a majority of the company's poultry. He said, "We just got to the point last year where the consumer is demanding the elimination of antibiotics in the food chain and wants transparency." Tyson made news earlier this month when an outbreak of bird flu was detected at multiple Tennessee Tyson chicken farms. Tyson also has a long history of being charged with animal abuse and price fixing. Tyson has been fined several times for busing into the U.S. undocumented Mexicans to work in Tyson slaughterhouses and providing them with phony green cards. Hayes, who originally spoke to Fox Business News, acknowledged challenges in running a company the size of Tyson. Let's just hope that Tyson has a less complicated future when they get completely behind plant-based protein products.
One of the biggest seafood stores in Sydney, Australia, was convicted of animal cruelty after a worker was videotaped hacking the tail off of a lobster while the animal was still alive and fully conscious. The video shows the lobster struggling desperately for nearly half a minute before the worker feeds the lobster through a bandsaw, dismembering the animal. Nicholas Seafood was charged with violating the New South Wales Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act. Crustaceans were added to the Act in 1997 in response to growing evidence that crustaceans feel pain. The popular seafood store pled guilty and was sentenced to a mere $1,500 fine. But this is the first conviction for cruelty to a crustacean in New South Wales. In the United States, lobsters are denied even the most basic legal protections. Not a single federal animal welfare law protects crustaceans or fish. Many states also exclude crustaceans and fish from their animal cruelty laws. As a result, countless aquatic animals used by the seafood industry endure lives of unimaginable pain and slow, cruel deaths. A 2010 undercover investigation of a fish slaughter facility in Texas, conducted by Mercy for Animals, exposed workers using pliers to pull the skin off of live fish and cutting fully conscious fish in half. Prosecutors in Texas refused to act despite clear evidence that these fish were in excruciating pain. That's why we all need to work to strengthen laws to protect all animals, including aquatic animals like lobsters and fish. Thankfully, you don't have to wait another minute to help stop the needless suffering of these sensitive animals. By choosing healthy plant-based meals, you can ensure that lobsters, crabs, fish, and other aquatic animals are spared senseless cruelty and death. You can check out chooseveg.com for delicious recipes, including 6 savory vegan seafood recipes and 9 vegan sushi recipes.
Coming up next on ACT Radio, we have a conversation with Kat Mendenhall, who is a certified vegan lifestyle coach and educator, a culinary nutrition expert certified by the Academy of Culinary Nutrition, and certified in plant-based nutrition through the T. Colin Campbell Foundation University, and a Food for Life instructor certified by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. She created an online store that sells vegan cowboy boots and accessories and is about to open a brick-and-mortar vegan store in Dallas. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas, Kat Mendenhall. Thanks for being with us, Kat.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Kat, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you got interested in veganism?
Absolutely. So 7 years ago, I embarked kind of on a journey that I really didn't have any idea where it would take me and that it would really forever change the course of my career and my life, all for the better. I was looking to improve my diet and my overall health. And so I happened to run across a book by Alicia Silverstone called The Kind Diet. She had just released that book, and I went and I purchased it, read it through. And that was the first time I really even heard about vegetarians, vegans, and I just decided to give this diet a try. I grew up right here in Dallas, but my parents both and my grandparents grew up in the country. My grandparents were cattle ranchers, and so every weekend when I was growing up, we went to the grandparents' farm. We did farming. We did, you know, cattle ranching. So I definitely was surrounded by that environment a lot growing up. Definitely a meat, you know, heavy consumed family, meat and potatoes, typical, you know, Texas food, barbecue, all that growing up. And I really just got into, you know, give away my age here. I got into my 40s and I'd always been a fitness activist and thought I was eating really healthy, but I just didn't feel good and kind of just started searching things out on my own. And that's when I ran across, you know, being vegan, which I had no idea. I just immediately cut out all meat products and all dairy. And in a couple of weeks, I felt 100% better, although I didn't have any particular ailments or disease or any, you know, high blood pressure or anything that I was fighting. I just felt more energy. I felt, you know, more refreshed, more vibrant. And it took a while to kind of cut out. This happens a lot when people transition or start to adopt a vegan diet. You know, maybe you'll start with meat or maybe it's dairy. And then eventually, you know, you learn to cut out other products when you see the overall health benefits. So it took a few more months before I cut out cheese and fish.
And then you went really radical and started getting certified in nutrition and vegan coaching and lots of other things. You've really self-educated yourself on veganism.
I did. I really went in like head first. And after a couple of years of doing my own research, and again, at this point, I didn't even know another vegan. I didn't know anybody in my, you know, here in Dallas, of course, a big city, but none of my family, friends were even vegetarian. So I just really dived deep in and did my own, like you said, research and study. And I just became so passionate about wanting to spread the message and wanting to teach other people, because I just felt like there had been a disservice to me my whole life. Like, why didn't I know this?
Right.
And so I figured there were a lot more people that, you know, probably felt the same. And so I wanted to learn how to share that message. And that's when I decided to quit a career I had in telecommunications for over 28 years. I was a sales executive at a company. And I had no idea what I was going to do. It was very scary. But I quit my job and just decided that I was going to figure this out of how I could, you know, get certified or go back. And I did. I went back to school just searching out how I can change my career path.
And so you came up on the idea of vegan cowboy boots. That seems a little bit bizarre. Why cowboy boots?
Well, that's interesting that you asked that, because what happened, you know, choosing a vegan diet was fairly easy. You know, I learned to make the substitutions. I learned how much I enjoyed all these new foods that are actually bringing into my diet and how great I felt. But removing leather from my life proved to be a little bit trickier. I enrolled in what's called Main Street Vegan Academy.
Sure.
It's a 6-day intensive vegan training, if you will, up in New York City by Victoria Moran. She's the founder. And I went to that really just blindsided. And again, I was still in very much like search and learning mode. And I got there and I saw all these people that they were yoga teachers, they were nutritionists, they were making vegan bath and body products. And it was just very overwhelming for me because I thought, well, what am I doing? You know, I'm not doing anything for the cause. And what I've always been a huge, had a huge affection for cowboy boots. And of course, growing up around cattle ranching and farming, they were a mainstay of my wardrobe, being Texan. I wore them year round. They became a real fashion staple for me. And so as I'm sitting there and I'm hearing all these people, what they're doing and feeling a little inadequate, we watched a documentary on the leather industry. And again, same thing that happened with the diet, my eyes were wide open and I could not believe the things that I were hearing about the leather industry, not only that it's not a co-product, it's a byproduct of the meat industry, that cows are raised solely for their skins, which, you know, endure cruel practices on factory farming, just like our food, but also the effects that it has on the environment, the gases and excrement that are contaminate our water, the land and water resources that are used, how leather's produced in countries that have no animal welfare laws, child labor laws, health and safety standards. So just hearing all this, again, I was just like, why didn't I know this?
Well, it's right. The industry keeps it a secret. But, you know, I think more and more people are becoming aware that leather is terrible for the environment. There have been many reports about poisonings and cases of cancer in people that live close to leather processing plants.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's the second culprit in air pollution outside of oil and gas, and obviously coming from a, you know, oil and gas state. I was just, again, dumbfounded at that. I was like, okay, I understand how meat is bad for the body, but, you know, I never put the connection. So I finally had that connection that what I was putting on my body was as equally important as what I was putting in it. Hmm. And if you can put a patch on your arm to keep you from smoking, then everything that we put on our body is also absorbed through our skin. So it just, again, this big awareness, but it created quite a bit of a problem for me because I'm like, what do I do about my boots? And, you know, it sounds a little shallow, but I was telling one of my fellow students at the academy, I said, you know, gosh, I had no idea about all this. And we were at lunch, and I'm like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do because I have, you know, this awful collection of cowboy boots, and I just don't know what I'll put on my feet anymore. And she looked at me just straight ahead, and she said, Kat, you go make them. Go make them vegan. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that is not me. Like, I know, I mean, I like fashion, and, you know, I like shoes and purses and all those great things, but I'm like, know nothing about making shoes and all this. So I went back to my hotel in New York, and I'm sitting there, and I'm Googling vegan cowboy boots, and, you know, I'm like the mad scientist all of a sudden, you know, trying to look at all this, and I'm coming up empty-handed. And so the next day at the academy, I can't even tell you what we learned that day because my mind was just going 90 to nothing about how do I make this happen? I can do this. How do I do it?
Wow.
And so by the time I left the academy, I had a company name, a company logo. I was sketching designs. I mean, it just like it was. Boom, it happened. You know?
Yeah, it seems like it just clicked for you all of a sudden because they are gorgeous boots on your website.
Thank you. So I came back home and I happened to run across an article that talked about, it was in Texas Monthly, give them a little plug here. They had an article on the top 25 handmade bootmakers in Texas because I had standards. I had some expectations in starting the company. And so I contacted the top 25 handmade bootmakers in Texas, and only three responded favorably. And so
we're kind of interested to hear what that.
Most of them told me I was crazy, and that, you know, that this couldn't be done, and, you know, this was a dying market, and, you know, blah 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 blah. So, I found one guy, he said, send me the material, let me look at it. I found a company here in the USA, because that was also important to me, that I sourced from the USA. I found a company that was focused on generating synthetic organic materials only. And so it's a polyurethane base, there's no PVC, so there's no off-gassing. And the polyurethane, I call it vegan leather. Some people, you know, want to smirk at that, but they're like, because it's faux. And I'm like, no, there's a big difference. Faux leather, most of it was made with PVC, and it was meant to be a throwaway product. So if you bought shoes or purse or something with PVC, it was usually cheap and expensive. And again, it was considered a throwaway product. The polyurethane leather is a totally different quality. It's durable. It's pliable, it's water resistant, it's breathable, it's beautiful, and it's really indistinguishable from animal leather. So I call it vegan leather because, A, that's what people resonate with, the word leather, and I'm out to make it a real thing. I mean, it should be vegan leather. It shouldn't be animal leather. So, yeah, send them the material, and he put the boots together. He called me, and he said, I'm sending you the prototype, and he said, they've been making, this bootmaker and a man that works with him have been making boots for almost 30 years. And they were dumbfounded. They could not believe how well the material worked. The same process that they do with animal leather, they do on my boots. And they were floored. And when I got the prototype, I was floored. 'Cause I couldn't believe that. A, I actually made it happen, you know, that we actually had a vegan boot.
After being online for several years, you're opening a brick-and-mortar store in Dallas. How's that coming along?
So thanks for asking about that, because it's coming along great. I've already got the space. Now I'm just working on doing a little build out, which is not too intensive. It's a very small space to start out with. But my goal has always tried to be to reach mainstream shoppers. I mean, the vegan community has been supportive. They've helped get the message out. They continue to shout out my company, which I'm so grateful for, that I now have this huge, you know, where before when I started out becoming vegan, I didn't even know another vegan. Now I have these people around the world that I'm connected to, and they've been so gracious. But I want to reach the Main Street shopper, because these are the people that need to know that there are beautiful alternatives to animal leather, and that animals do not have to suffer for high-end fashion. And so with the store, what we're going to do is we're going to have my boots, also make handmade belts. We're adding wallets and purses as I speak. And then I'm also going to showcase other vegan designers. So we're going to have not only some clothing products, but we're also going to have some bath and some home products. So it's going to be all 100% vegan. You go in there, you don't have to check a label, which is another thing that I really try to educate people on as far as the fashion market is, you know, learn to read labels. That's where you can start. But it'll be 100% vegan. We hope to open by the 1st of April, but, you know, those things are always kind of tricky, just depending on how much I can get done in our inventory before then.
What's the name of your store?
What's ironic is I actually got the store name years ago, even before all this boots and my coaching and cooking career took off. It's called Mend RT, which is vegan retail therapy. So it's Mend Retail Therapy. Fashion you can feel good about. Again, it's going to be high-end vegan fashion for your body and your home. But yeah, I actually registered that name and purchased it with a web person a few years back, thinking that at some point I would love to open a boutique. So it's kind of cool now that I didn't have to try to come up with a name. I already had it.
Well, I'm just curious about, as a former owner of several cowboy boots myself before I came vegan, how does your pricing compare with leather cowboy boots? I haven't bought any boots for, like I said, since I went vegan 20 years ago. It was back in the day, but I'm just curious about how the pricing compares.
That's a good question. So our boots are 100% handmade. There is not one piece of the boot process that's made with a machine. So handmade products, because of the labor costs and also because they're made here in the USA, are going to be a little bit more expensive. If you went and purchased an animal leather pair of custom, because the boots are custom made, also handmade boots, you would be looking at upper hundreds to thousands of dollars. My boots are definitely below cost of what a typical custom handmade boot would be. And it's not because the material's cheaper. We just wanted to try to price it accordingly so that they could be affordable. My main mission is, you know, to educate the public and to show again that these alternatives can be as fashionable and as high-end and as beautiful as anything made with animal leather.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's certainly a great resource to have. I mean, you think about, you know, I travel a fair amount for work in different parts of the country, and people, you know, you ask, they're like, oh, where are you from? I say Texas, and they say, oh, well, I went through Dallas once, or, you know, like, you know, it's very, obviously very different in different parts of Texas. But, you know, oftentimes people just pop through and they just have a day or a couple hours and they're trying to buy the thing that's most Texan. So they, you know, they're like, oh, I got to, you know, head back home with a cowboy hat or cowboy boots, or, you know, whether it's reflective of how most of us dress every day is a different story. But it's nice that you provide that option. And it seems like the, you know, the vegan scene is growing in Dallas. You know, there's a vegan barbecue restaurant now. There's I was reading about a vegan Mexican restaurant that just changed because the owner was having major health issues. And so they went completely vegan. So it seems like there's definitely a changing scene in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
That's correct. I mean, the vegan scene is really, really hot in Dallas right now. And we have some other entrepreneurs here in the city that are doing amazing things. We have Earth Day Texas coming up in April. And Trammell Crow, who is on the verge, I will say, of transitioning to a vegan-friendly diet, I will say. His mission, he put together a vegan panel through a friend of mine. I'm on the panel, and he wants to make Earth Day Texas more vegan-friendly. So this year we're going to have a dedicated vegan village. They have 12 galas leading up to the Earth Day event every year. Six of them are going to be served vegan meals. So people aren't even going to know. They're just going to serve vegan meals. So there's a lot of really exciting things she has going on in Dallas, from restaurants to other entrepreneurs, having events, making products, to here's Earth Day Texas, which is the largest Earth Day event in the country, pushing veganism. So that's huge. We have some friends of mine that are releasing cookbooks this year that I'm bringing through Dallas, and I'm going to use my space as kind of multi-purpose and have an event for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's just tagging on to, you know, what's really hot now, that we're getting a lot of publicity, and that it's been a long change coming, but it's here. It's came, and it's hot.
That's great. Yeah, it's really wonderful. And it seems like if you wanted to have a second store, El Paso would be a great place to think about. I know. Well, we have a lot of these custom boot makers here in town, I think. I've seen a display at our airport for custom leather cowboy boots. It'd be great to have one with custom vegan cowboy boots.
And believe it or not, the vegan scene is growing a bit in El Paso as well. We've been talking with Kat Mendenhall, who's a creator of Texas-style vegan cowboy boots and a nutrition advisor, a certified lifestyle coach of veganism. We thank you so much. And can you tell our listeners where they can find your boots online if they can't make it to your store in Dallas?
Absolutely. So my website is going to be Kat, and it's with a K, K-A-T, Mendenhall, just like it sounds. It's Mendenhall. So it's katmendenhall.com. You can go in there. All my services, all my products are listed. All the store information will be added soon. So if you are coming through Dallas, be sure to stop by or call and make an appointment, and we can get you fitted and help you design your own pair.
Sounds good. Thanks for being with us, Kat.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks so much.
If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to meet Kat in person, she told us that she'll be joining us for our spring dinner with guest speaker J.L. Fields. That's May 6th at the Country Inn and Suites, and you can find more about how to reserve your spot at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACT Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button. Until next time, I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the Earth, the Animals, and a Healthier Humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.